Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, and Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. We've had a sad episode this morning happening up in Northern Virginia involving some of our members of Congress. We will be talking about Afghanistan, but before we do that, I just wanted to make a comment about that because obviously nobody can defend what went on. Nobody. And I was especially saddened because the baseball game was one of my favorite things. And I always thought, isn't that wonderful? Because conditions were so different when the Democrats played the Republican. Everything was put aside. It was one thing that brought people together. And I still think it will and does. But this was a terrible thing to happen. And it looks like Scalise and the injuries will all not be life-threatening. And that is good. But it certainly is sad to see this disruption. But it also means that we live in an unsafe world. And the other thing, since we don't have all the information, one thing that generally happens after this is politics does enter into it. And there's been people who said you never should let an emergency go away because we can make use of it.
Yeah.
And I just hope that doesn't happen, whether it's Republican versus Democrat or whether it's guns versus knives or even the foreign policy. There's just no need for this right now. But it does raise some questions about security, and how that should be handled in a free and open society.
I think it also raises questions about culture. It seems so bizarre. I mean, if what we're hearing about the shooter is true, he was a 66-year-old man. He had his own business, but he was obsessed about politics, And it seems that we're getting more and more so and more divided about these things. The Republicans watch their shows and the Democrats watch their shows, and they get so worked up over this that you'll have someone like this who's a little off his hinge. Taking action. There's so many other things in the world besides this.
Yes, but I think we can look at some of the other incidents that we put up with in the last several years, and that is when there's a shooter, does it involve foreign policy? Does it involve jihadists, radicals? And I think if you look at everything that's happened in this country, very often it may be related loosely to some of those events, but very often it's related to one individual, like you mentioned, may come unhinged. And that's what this looks like. Because he belonged to a political party and he wasn't especially enamored by the president, I don't think this is the whole answer. I think the guy has to be unhinged and to use this kind of violence. But culturally, people shouldn't resort to violence, obviously. But I do want to talk a little bit today about the hearings this past week with Mattis, because this was an interesting hearing. Nothing really new, and yet it was newly said once again. We're not winning the war in Afghanistan. 15 years, 2,300 Americans killed, 20,000 injured, and yet they're coming up with a new plan. Of course, Obama had a new plan, and he expanded the troops there over 100,000. That was a wonderful surge, but it didn't work. They're down to, 9,000 now? So they say they need more troops. But they're talking, about 3,000 or 5,000. At the same time, what I find interesting is the president's deferring to the generals, almost not just taking their advice, but if you need them, order them, get them. You're the deciders, and they've already been doing that in Syria and Somalia, I believe. The generals make the decision. So the conditions are deteriorating, and they're talking about continuing a policy which has been going on for 15 years, and they're talking about a token increase of a couple thousand, 5,000 to 8,000 people, and of course all that does is feed into the people who want real war, and some of the neocons are going to say that's not enough. Quit playing games. What we want is a real war. So this is what we're facing. And when they try to pin Mattis down, we're working on a plan. Maybe in 6 weeks we're going to have a plan to come to the Congress and tell us what our goals are. And of course they want a secure government and safety in Afghanistan. I wish that we would concentrate on a secure and free government here and protection of our civil liberties. That's what I would like to see.
And I think we actually have a clip of Mattis yesterday before the committee making this admission that should really shock no one.
Taliban. We're not winning in Afghanistan right now, and we will correct this as soon as possible.
Mattis defined winning in Afghanistan as when the Afghan government is strong enough to drive down enemy violence to a...
And Senator McCain was not happy to hear that there's no strategy and that we're not winning, and he threatened to cut off money if they don't have a good strategy soon. So let's hope they don't come up with it,
right?
Because that would get their attention. But, you know, it is kind of comical in a sick way that after so many billions, trillions maybe of dollars and thousands of lost lives, however many Afghanis have been killed, innocent civilians, all of a sudden we're saying, oh, we don't have a plan, we need a new plan, we need a strategy.
You know, and the other thing that we face, arguing our position, is the people who want to win, the people who want to send more, a lot of it is saving face. You know, we can't just admit we've lost. Of course, that happened in Vietnam. There had to be admission. And people want to continue. It came up in the presidential debates. You know, we can't do this. This means all these people who have died, they died in vain. Well, you know, if you say they died in vain, the life is worthless. You know, that's, and they play on that. But what if you have mistakes made and people die and they might have not had to die? Maybe they would not have died in vain if we learned something from it. But here it is, same old story again, same policy, nothing new. They can't declare what victory is all about. And the other disgusting part about it is just think of the two biggest wars, although serious in competition there, is Iraq and Afghanistan. And of course, the excuse was that was the Congress gave authority to the president to deal with the people who participated in 9/11. Well, the Taliban wasn't involved. The Afghans weren't involved. Saddam Hussein, even though they played that up and people believed he was involved, they used that as an excuse, you know, to go in. So they don't even have a justification other than you have to come up and either accept or mock the position that maybe there is an ulterior motive, like maybe there's a financial motive, maybe it has to do with oil, and maybe it has to do with religion and different things like that. But the real tragedy is the loss of lives, not only what we have lost, but the lives that we participated in killing innocent people. And this should be a wake-up call to us. People who sense this, I gather that a lot of Americans have awakened on this and would respond favorably, but where are they going to hear it? You know, we were hoping to hear a little bit of better position on foreign policy with the administration, but I don't think we've heard it, because this is what we're talking about right now. It's the administration we have right now. How many troops are going to go to Afghanistan and when?
Yes, they're just on autopilot from the previous administration and before that. But, you know, you mentioned money earlier, and I think there's something to do with that. I think there is a budgetary issue. The Joint Chiefs Chairman, General Dunford, was up before the committee as well, and he blamed sequestration for our problems. He says our competitive advantage is eroding. We're limited in our ability to project power. Now, we've put this up before. You know what the chart looks like.
Yeah.
With the U.S. spending. So if by outspending the rest of the entire world, we're still not able to project power, then something is wrong. Where is that money going? The Taliban don't seem to be having a problem projecting power.
Right. And, you know, Spicer's been quizzed on this, and he said, well, we have to win, and winning is a stable government, and the reduction and elimination of the violence that's going on. Good goals, but a little bit, out of the possibility. But he also added, the goal of the foreign policy is to eliminate any threat any place in the world. Now, what is he talking about? Threat to whom? Which country is about to invade us? You know, I really, in spite of all the propaganda, I don't think it's on the minds of Putin and Russia that they're wondering about how they're going to blow up America and invade this country. We're doing it to ourselves when we think about blowing up our liberty, so I don't think that's going to happen. But this whole idea that we feel obligated, and they state this is the policy, to eliminate any threat of violence around the world.
This, I mean, it shows an administration whose people like Spicer and those, they're shockingly devoid of any understanding of how the world works. You know, they must be from some sort of a bubble. This is an impossibility. You know, we had Nicholas Taleb in here. I wish we were here now because he could talk about that in statistical terms, in terms of anti-fragility. And, you know, this is a fragile thing that you have to protect against any threat anywhere. It's an impossibility. It's a recipe for bankruptcy.
You know, this move toward more quick decision-making by the generals, it bothers me, because it seems like traditionally we always at least pretended that civilian control would be on all these issues, but I think the control was really maybe not military, but it was deep state. But this time it's Trump is pushing the generals should have more flexibility. And I could see that in a state of war like World War II, generals can't call up Washington, D.C. and talk about who's coming over the ridge, that yeah. sort of thing. They have to be able to make decisions. But I don't like over-militarization. Police are over-militarized, and we have a very violent culture, and we have too many laws and drug wars going on, this sort of thing. Having so many generals in the administration and having a general involved in the Department of Homeland Security, this bothers me because it's almost like, what is this positioning for if the real problem that threatens us is violence here in this country? And when the economic collapse comes, that I think is going to be a major problem. It's going to be the violence in the city. So we have, I think, a setup that makes it easy to shift over to martial law. And that generally is the case. Today, with this episode in Virginia, I was delighted to hear that at least the Virginia police came. You know, they didn't emphasize, you know, that the CIA and the FBI were there. Of course, the Capitol Hill police, that was very legitimate, too. But when events happen, when we have hurricanes and things like that, all of a sudden it's total takeover by federal authority and policing authorities. And when you think of all the laws that the federal government has to involve, we live in a militant state. And it is a concern to me that in the midst of a real significant economic crisis, that the militarism that is just standing around looking for things to do, I'm afraid they'll be given some jobs.
Yeah, and I think this is the whole idea of devolving power back down to the generals. I think that's reflective of General McMaster, another general who's a national security advisor. That's his philosophy. That was his claim to fame. That was his book. But I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a danger. There's the accountability factor. And obviously, you know, it's not to Congress to micromanage a war. But, this is... At the very least, this 2001 authorization has been stretched very, very far to say this is a legitimate war. But you have accountability problems, you have oversight problems, you have reporting problems. The Pentagon and the military, they're going to have a tendency to circle the wagons and not allow information out about who was hit, how many civilians. In all of these things, they're going to try to keep it away from. So if you let go of civilian control completely, you're going to embolden a military to really be poised against the people who it should be protecting.
You know, we've been there for more than 15 years. We've had a lot of loss of life, and it's a real tragedy. And they still can't figure out what they're still asking. What are we there for? How are you going to describe victory? I think it's an illegitimate war, and that's why there's no answer to our goal is A, B, C, or whatever it is. It's so different without evaluating World War II in context of all of history of, you know, this 20th century. But the war, it was very well known. Germany declared war against us. We were attacked at Pearl Harbor. The goal was precisely we declare the war. And in that, little over 3 years, what was accomplished, because they knew exactly, they defined the enemy, and they said when the war would be over, and it had a sense of legitimacy to it, and we then still remained on the moral high ground because we didn't move our troops there first. But now it seems like we've lost that. We've lost that moral high ground. And when you think, oh, the Taliban are bad people, but what if you understand that, what if people come to understand that they are defending what they consider their homeland, and they have the moral high ground. We're the outsiders. And maybe that motivates them to fight to the finish. Just as I think the colonists in our country had the moral high ground because of the abuse they were receiving from somebody 3,000 miles away. So I think the illegitimacy of the war will never allow us to have a precise answer, because if you say it's a military outright victory, means you better not have 100,000, you better put 250,000, but 250,000 didn't win the war in Vietnam, because we were never able to define the legitimacy of the war.
Yeah, I think, you know, the final thing that I would think is you can't win a war like this if you don't understand who your enemy is. It's impossible. Mattis said yesterday, Afghanistan is the center of international terrorism. We have to fight them there. Well, that's not the case, as you just pointed out. These people, for good or bad, whatever they are, they're fighting for their homeland. It's not the center of international terrorism. It's like Sun Tzu. If you don't understand the characteristics of your enemy, there's no way you can defeat him.
And the other thing is how do you define the radicals and the terrorists and certain things? Because the people that defend their country don't see themselves the same way we do. And that's why once you get involved carelessly, the problems just magnify, and it's hard to extricate ourselves from those situations because we're not precise. The founders tried to make it precise for us. Yes, have a military, have a defense, and be willing to defend our country and our Constitution. But if you don't follow the rules, you can't define that, and you end up with these no-win wars. And they really have been going on for 60, 70 years, and they're not going to end unless we change the policy. That is what is resistant. Even the ones who wouldn't agree with McCain and go with 200,000 or 300,000 troops and fight for victory are saying, well, we can't just walk away. Then everybody died in vain. You know, we can't do this, so we have to keep fighting and have more people die in vain. I mean, it makes no sense. There's no sense to the type of foreign policy we have. It's very, very dangerous. We here at the Liberty Report would like to promote the cause of peace and liberty with common sense, and it can be found in the principle of non-aggression. Just mind our own business. Let people make their own mistakes, just as long as they don't come and harm us and do harm to us the same way in social affairs and economic affairs. Just let people make their own mistakes and suffer the consequence of their errors, rather than pretending that we can mold the whole world, mold the economic system, and mold individual behavior. It's impossible, and that's the opposite of a free society. We vote here for a free society. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.